And then there were none. College basketball season is over. The Virginia Cavaliers, the number one team in the land. And shame on all those who said, oh, it's going to be a boring college basketball national championship. It was anything but that. We'll hear from the winners and the losers from Texas Tech. Baseball on the forefront, the Raging Cajuns hosting the Bulldogs of Louisiana Tech. We'll have a preview of that. LSU traveling to Southern University in Baton Rouge. We'll preview that as well. The Pelicans play their last game of the season. Hallelujah! Oh, what a season it's been. We'll recap it all, and we'll talk to one of the most successful winning coaches in all of basketball. She just cut down the nets on Sunday with another title. All these stories and more today, Tuesday, April 9th, 2019.
Jerome will bring it up the floor. Jerome attacking, goes past Odiasse, kicks right corner. Open three, DeAndre Hunter got it! Splashing it from the right corner to tie it at 68. 12.9 seconds to go.
Zone defense here shown by Texas Tech. Love the way Chris Beard on occasion just mixes the defense up.
Here's Hunter shooting a three over the zone in the right corner. Splash it home. That got a fist pump from Tony Bennett. And it gets Virginia back on top. 75-73. 2 minutes to go in overtime.
How big is DeAndre Hunter been? My goodness.
Monstrous. 27 tonight for Hunter. Jerome, long inbound to Braxton Key. Key will run it to the other end for a two-hand flush. And a little exclamation point, perhaps, on the first Virginia men's basketball national title. 83-75, Virginia. Mooney up the floor, three on the left wing. That is no good. Rebound pulled down by DeAndre Hunter. And they're going to dribble it out from ruin to redemption. The Virginia Cavaliers are the 2019 NCAA National Champions. 85-77, Virginia wins its first men's basketball championship.
Yep, 1 year after making history as the first ever number one seed to fall to a 16, Virginia broke through with the program's first ever national championship, an 85-77 overtime win against Texas Tech that will go down as one of the best title games in recent memory. It was a terrific game, a game that rolled out slowly as elite defensive teams picked up the pace early, and then all of a sudden, after both teams combined for a 1-for-10 from the field and the jokes started to roll in left and right, then the game started to roll back and forth. And with the lead changing every couple of minutes, and I don't think anybody complained about the fact that this game went into overtime. And the Virginia Cavaliers behind DeAndre Hunter, who was just sensational with 27 points on 8 of 16 shooting to go along with 9 rebounds as he won the head-to-head matchup against fellow NBA prospect Jared Culver, and Virginia gets it done. It had its moments of controversy. It had its moments of replay. It had its moments. But the moments on the court were pretty darn good. Yes, it is. Yes, it was. And Virginia, man, they just seemed like it was never easy for them, was it? Never. The whole tournament. They've only had three Final Four appearances, and they always are in the shadow of North Carolina and Duke for ACC supremacy. But Tony Bennett, he's now won 4 ACC regular season titles, and he's won a national championship. I thought it was a heck of a game. I really do. And so many good players across the board. Just spectacular. The most outstanding player of the Final Four was Kyle Guy of Virginia. But so many other players were so good, including DeAndre Hunter. And here's head coach Tony Bennett talking about his best player coming through with the best plays at the very best time.
DeAndre, I mean, he was just named the Defensive Player of the Year, and his length and his ability to lock in and slide is as good as most. And I thought, you know, that was a great two-way performance, defensively and offensively, in this game, in this setting. And he saved his best for last. And that tells you there's something in that young man. And he's got more. He's scratching the surface.
He's scratching the surface. And he readily admitted he needed to get more aggressive than he had been in the first half. And here is the most outstanding player of the national championship game, DeAndre Hunter.
I just tried to be aggressive. I was aggressive in the first half, I believe, but my shots just weren't falling. And I just tried to do the same thing in the second half, and my shots were falling. So just staying aggressive, that's it.
Time after time after time, he knocked down shots. But I thought the guard play of Virginia was spectacular with Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy, just to name two of the three. But they came up with the biggest plays at the biggest times. And Ty Jerome kind of summed it up with this truly a dream come true season.
This is, you know, forget last year. This is just everything you dream of since you're a little kid. You know what I mean? I'm not even thinking about UMBC right now. I'm just thinking this is a dream come true. And it's even more than that because you never even imagine you'll be able to spend a year with people you actually love. You know what I mean? Your teammates and your coaches and, you know, not a lot of people get along like we do. So to share this moment with them is unbelievable.
Kyle Guy, jumper after jumper after jumper. He said since last year it was a goal to win the title, and he summed it up as well by talking about what he was feeling at that time. All right, it's locked up a little bit. We'll get back to that. But look, it's a great feel. And nothing to be ashamed of with Texas Tech. They finish at 31-7. But the Red Raiders were just terrific, just terrific. And Chris Beard, an outstanding job as the coach. And in fairness, and as a true sportsman and gentleman, Chris Beard had nothing but good things, cut number one, to say about UVA.
First, I just want to congratulate Virginia basketball and Coach Bennett and tell them how much respect we have for their program. The game was everything we thought it would be. Thought it would come down to one last possession, and it did in regulation. And then in overtime, it just got away from us a little bit. But nothing but respect for their program, their coaches, their players, their fans. I thought it was a great national championship game.
I was, too. I thought it was absolutely terrific. And then all of a sudden, Chris Beard started focusing to the next opportunity. And he let the college basketball world know his thoughts about his team and next season.
In terms of Texas Tech basketball, we're not going anywhere. You know, we'll be back in this tournament sooner than later. And we intend to be a part of college basketball as we build the program.
So now the season comes to an end, and you're going to start seeing more and more opportunities out there. Rick Barnes is staying at the University of Tennessee, met with Phil Fulmer, and Tennessee sweetened the pot with UCLA courting him. And UCLA failed yet again, so they went to another school, to Cincinnati, and they called on Mick Cronin, and Mick Cronin is heading to Westwood to become the head coach of the UCLA Bruins, a no-nonsense, tough coach. And sometimes, you know, it's not the first guy you want. Maybe it's not the second guy you want. Maybe, you know, you just go through your list and your pecking order, and sometimes it works out, Nick Saban at LSU, and sometimes it does. So we'll see what Mick Cronin can do out there at UCLA. But I thought, in summing it all up, It's the tournament that never stops giving. It is just remarkable, the level of basketball and the enthusiasm and the effort and the emotions that tug on you during those games. and during those weekends. It's just, it's great. It is really great. March Madness is spectacular, and it lives on, and I can't wait till next year when we start it all up again, and we'll see who's in the field and who cuts down the final nets. It never, ever comes short of expectations in my book. It just never does. It was spectacular. So congratulations to the Virginia Cavaliers. Later on in the program, in hour number two, we'll talk to the head coach of the women's national championship team, the Baylor Bears, Kim Mulkey, with several Louisiana Tide assistant coaches, several Louisiana Tide players on her team. She won her third national title. She is the consummate winner, and we're looking forward to talking with her in hour number two. Roger Cador will join us in hour number two as well, the longtime Southern University head baseball coach who built the program from dead nothing into something where they've got a field, they've got a dugout, they've got lights. They had nothing. They had nothing. And we'll talk to him about how this LSU-Southern series began. LSU has dominated. They'll resume it tonight. And you can listen to the ballgame right here on 103.7 The Game. But we'll take our first time out of the day when we come back. Another big game at the Teague as Tony Robichaux's Raging Cajuns host Lane Burroughs' Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. We got Lane Burroughs coming up next to preview the ballgame. Stay with us.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. What a beautiful, beautiful day for baseball. And yes, at the Teague this evening at 6:30, it'll be another great in-state rivalry as the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs will be traveling down to Lafayette to take on the Raging Cajuns. The Bulldogs, 21-10 overall, 8-4 in Conference USA play, and their head coach, Lane Burroughs, kind enough to join us. Coach, man, I greatly appreciate the time, buddy. What a beautiful day for baseball.
Man, I tell you what, Jordy, it is. I don't know how it's been in South Louisiana, but we've seen enough rain.
Yes.
And moving around schedules and weekends have been crazy. So good change of pace. Good to see some sunshine and good weather. And I know it's going to be nice down in Lafayette tonight.
Boy, if you can give the fans kind of a similar situation as to when you two teams met back on February 19th, I remember Mason Robinson with a walk-off single in the 10th got you guys a 3-2 victory in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it was and it was cold that night. And you know, I think
yes,
both teams were still trying to, first midweek of the year, trying to figure out who you are. And, you know, ironically, Mason Robinson's having a good year for us, but he won't play tonight. He's got a pulled oblique, and he didn't play in two of our games this weekend. So we'll miss him, but next man up. And
yeah.
I mean, it's every time we play ULL, it's going to be a battle. So much respect for Coach Rope and their program, their history, and we know every time we hook it up, it's going to be a great game. It's just a good midweek matchup, and looking forward. I know they're playing well right now. I know they had come out of the gate. Things weren't going well for them early, but I know it looks like they've righted the ship a little bit. Their numbers are good, and we know we got our work cut out for us tonight.
Speaking of a team that's righted the ship, I mean, you started conference play at 1-4. You had to be scratching your head a little bit, but since then, you've won 7 straight CUSA games, and you're in third place in the league. So after 4 weeks of conference action, you kind of got a feel for who your team is. So what turned things around for you?
Well, I've had to answer that question a lot the last 2 days, and I enjoy answering it. I think it's simple, Jordy. We are starting pitch in our weekend guys. Opening weekend conference in Southern Miss, we got swept. None of our starters got out of the third inning. And when you got a when you got to use your bullpen, especially early in the weekend, it's not going to be good. We knew right out of the gate we probably got swept on Friday night. We had to go in really early. So we go up to Middle Tennessee the next week, and we got a good start on Friday. We won the ball game. We got beat on Saturday, and we got a good start on Sunday. We were able to get the next weekend UAB. We got three quality starts. Was able to sweep those guys in this past weekend against San Antonio. Three quality starts from our weekend guys pitching us deep in the ball game and coming out of the game with a lead or a chance to win. And another thing, that's number one. Another thing is Hunter Wells, who broke our single-season hitch record last year. He's probably our best hitter, most dangerous guy. He's been hurt most of the year. He missed about 10 games with a pulled oblique, and he just wasn't healthy. And he's back in the lineup and near 100%. He just lengthens our lineup out. He makes it tougher to navigate. So, yeah, I think those two things, the quality starts on the weekend we're getting and having Hunter Wells back in the lineup has really helped us.
It always helps to have your best players back on the field. There's no question about that. Lane Burrows, the head coach of the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs, 6:30 first pitch, the Raging Cajuns and the Bulldogs from the Teague. Wow, Braxton Smith. I don't know if I've ever heard of a player recording saves on a Friday night, a Saturday night, and a Sunday like he did over the Roadrunners last weekend. Tell me about Braxton Smith, the Conference USA Picture of the Week.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what. Two of those saves are on Friday. We played two games on Friday.
So that's right.
That makes it more impressive.
That's even more special. Yeah. Wow.
We were able to, I was so pleased with our guys the way we talk about the ability to adjust and adaptability. One of our deals we talk about and. You know, with the weather, we had to play two games on Friday and start at 3:00, and that throws everybody out of their routine, players, coaches, and we were able to hold on. He got two saves on Friday in both games, and we did not play Saturday because of the rain and came back Sunday and had to play at 10:00 in the morning, and our guys came out, played well, and lo and behold, he got his third save of the weekend on Sunday. You know, he's one of those guys, and he played at LSU Eunice and transferred from there, and he's just got that closer mentality, man. A lot of people run from the chaos. He enjoys it. He embraces the chaos, and it's real confidence, and he wants the ball when it matters. And you know, that's a hard trait to find these days, and that's half the battle. And just he's pitching really well for us. He can get a punch out when he's on, and he's been really throwing strikes for us, and that's the main thing you need from your guy at the back of the ball game.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned LSU Eunice. I mean, that's what a factory, right? There's so many players that leave there and go and play in major college programs. It's unbelievable.
Well, Jeff's done a great job there. I mean, I think the record speaks for itself. You know, and the crazy thing is Braxton Smith is our closer. And like you said, Jordy, our Conference USA Pitcher of the Week, and doing well for us, tied the league, leading with saves. And he didn't even pitch a lot there. So that tells you how loaded they are. We got a guy that really didn't pitch a whole lot for him, but he's found his niche here and at the back end of the ball games. And like I said, he has the ability when he's on to get you a punch out when he needs it. And he likes the role. He embraces it, and he wants to be out there when the game's on the line.
That's awesome. Lane Burrows, Louisiana Tech head coach, joining us. I'm reading where you're going to start a lefty, David Leal. So it looks like lefty versus lefty tonight. Tell me about David.
Yeah. Well, David Leal's, last year was our midweek guy and had a great year for us. He was first team all-conference USA. We used him in the midweek games, and he had our best numbers. He was penciled in this year to be our Friday guy, and 2 weeks before the season, he was having some pain in his foot. We took him to the doctor. He had a broken bone and had surgery. Jeez. So he just got back. It's been an 8-week process, and tip our hat to our training staff. It's David. He kept his arm in shape and kept working, and his first outing was against UAB 2 weekends ago. He pitched one inning, and he started last week against McNeese through 2 innings. And we're still working him back in, but to his credit, he kept his arm in shape. Coach Silva, our pitching coach, they did a great job, and our training staff. And so he's just working back in, and, yeah, it kind of hurt us out of the gate losing a guy that was probably going to be your Friday night. And, but glad to have him back out, and, you know, he probably, with a broke foot, it's hard to do a lot of cardio, he still got to where he can go through the lineup multiple times. So he'll throw a couple innings tonight, hopefully maybe three, and we'll probably use a lot of guys as well.
Gotcha. Elaine Burroughs, head coach, Louisiana Tech. Your team has won 7 straight conference games. The Raging Cajuns have won 5 of their last 6 games. That tells me this is going to be a really, really competitive game. When you talk to your club, they know about Coach Robichaud's ball club. What is it that his club does the best that concerns you?
Well, yeah, you know, number one, their number one hitter, Cantrell, is having a player of the year type season. I mean, the guy's top of their leading their team in hitting and a lot of stolen bases and home runs. He's just a really good ball. They're very athletic. Our guys know that. I thought when they came and played us earlier in the year, it was one of their better lineups they've had in a few years as far as athleticism and the ability to drive the ball out of the ballpark. And you know they do such a great job with their pitchers traditionally. They're going to have good arms. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great place to go play, man. Great fans and good venue. And our guys know what they're up against. They know how important all these games are, especially now that we're on the back end of our season. And you know, and they're playing well now. We knew they would. So, our guys knows what's at stake, and we're looking forward to it, man. Get out there and compete against a great club tonight.
That's awesome, Lane. I can't thank you enough for your time. Who do you got? Who do you have this weekend?
We are going to FAU. It's a crazy week for us. That's what we told our calves, man. Sunday. It's a big boy baseball week. So we got a big road game against a great team. And then we're leaving tomorrow to go to Dallas, spend the night to hit an early flight on Thursday to Boca Raton. So it's we got our work cut out for us. 4 road games against 2 quality programs. And FAU's leading our league. They're in first place. They're 11-1 in our conference. So it's a big boy baseball week. That's what we told them. And we'll see what we're made of at the end of this week.
I don't know, Coach. I'm telling you, if I was in Boca Raton, I might be on the beach. I might tell listen to the game on the radio. I don't know if I could go to the ballpark at Boca. You know what I mean?
It's surely enticing, no doubt about it.
Well, Lane, thank you for your time. Best of luck this week and continued success in Conference USA and in the postseason, buddy. We wish you nothing but the best. You're always a class act.
George.
Thank you.
Man, appreciate you having me on. Thanks, Jordan.
You got it, man. You take care. Again, 6:30 tonight at the Teague. 2 really, really good ball clubs. Both starting to, didn't start off hot, but they're starting to peak a little bit. Should be a great ball game. 6:30, first pitch at the tee. It'll be the last tip in the Smoothie King Center. Glory be! The Pelicans put this season to bed once and for all. We'll talk about it with Will Guillory next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Well, the marathon, that we see the finish line. I mean, it's right there for the grabbing, and thank goodness the New Orleans Pelicans will grab it after tonight as they wrap up this season of ignominy with a closure tonight as they take on the team that's projected to win it all, the Golden State Warriors. Let's talk about the franchise and all the things going on with the Athletic beat writer for the Athletic in New Orleans. That's our good friend Will Guillory. Will, how happy are you, or are you happy? Are you sad that tonight has come?
I mean, I'm sad because, you know, I always enjoy going to the arena and seeing, you know, a good game or some of the best guys coming to town. But I won't be sad to see a team, you know, playing like 8 guys and like 4 of them weren't even on NBA teams a couple weeks ago. So I won't be sad to see that team go, but it's always a bittersweet time of year now, especially when the team you're covering isn't going to the playoffs.
Pelicans aren't playing anybody. Kevin Durant is out, but Boogie Cousins will play. Did I see where Anthony Davis is listed as probable? Do you think they play him one last time?
Well, I would say we need to slow down because he has been listed probable for, I would say, probably the last 5 or 6 games, and they've announced him as being out right before. So I think there's a good chance he probably sits out again tonight, but you know, I think it's just a weird situation because I've talked to people around the team about this. Would he even want to play one last game in front of the Smoothie King Center crowd? And I don't even know if that's something he cares about or if he wants to go out there and get booed again, does he rather avoid that? I think it's just a weird situation. And it would really be weird if we see Boogie come into town and get killed tonight, and then they boo AD, which I would be insane to think about, you know, that happening. If I told you that would happen like 4 months ago, you'd have thought I was crazy.
Yeah, and what if they guard each other? Wouldn't that be interesting? I'd pay just to watch a little bit of that. That would be fun. But I don't think it's going to happen. Do you?
Yeah, I doubt it. It would be fun. I know DeMarcus Cousins wants to come in here and put on a show, especially for everybody that thought he was done after, you know, tearing his Achilles. And this will be his first time playing in the Smoothie King Center since he tore his Achilles last January. So it's crazy to think how long ago it was and how really it wasn't that long ago that he was on this team and they had big dreams, and now he's on the Warriors and Anthony Davis is on his way out the door.
Meanwhile, the management has been holding interviews for their search for a new director of basketball operations. I'm told that they are interviewing or have interviewed Danny Ferry on Tuesday, today. Have you heard anything? And what are your thoughts about the candidates? And who do you think is the front runner?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting list of names that's been out there. You know, I've been hearing, you know, people like Danny Ferry, Gershon Roses, Larry Harris from the Golden State Warriors, mm-hmm. Trajan Langdon, I think is a name a lot of people are throwing around from the Brooklyn Nets. And I think what it shows is that the Pelicans, I think, are looking for someone that's kind of a new face, someone that really hasn't been around and hasn't been not really looking for that many retread candidates. And I think that Danny Ferry is one that kind of stands out because he doesn't really fit in with like a Gershon Roses or a Trajan Langdon. And I think it kind of shows that we talk a lot about the potential GM search, but I think it's more of a GM plus president search for the Pelicans. And I think they want to bring in somebody to be kind of the person over the entire franchise, kind of setting the culture and kind of eliminating that talking point a lot of people go to when they say, oh, Mickey Loomis is too involved with the Pelicans. They have a football guy making basketball decisions. I think that's something they want to eliminate. And I think it will potentially, we could see Danny Ferry in that type of role being a president of basketball operations with a GM like a Trajan Langdon under him, where you have an experienced guy over the entire operation. And then a younger guy with a vision that can kind of reset this roster and set them on a new track and kind of bring in a new type of basketball style here in New Orleans.
My gosh, it's the Duke of the South, and that means we're surely to get Zion Williamson in the draft, because it's another Dukie with Jahlil Okafor and Frank Jackson. I mean, this is the Duke on the Bayou.
And as a North Carolina fan, I would tell you I would not be very happy about this if I were just surrounded by Duke people every day. But if Zion comes down, I guess I could deal with it.
They got to do everything they can to try and get that pick, don't they? I mean, come on, they've got to try. That's got to be goal number one. Whoever takes over the controls of the ship, they got to figure out some way to get the guy, because that puts people in the seats. That makes you relevant immediately.
Yeah, and if they have any doubt about what the fan base wants, I would suggest them, the people from the Pelicans, go look at my mentions after that Sacramento Kings game when they figure out a way to win. And Elfrid Payton had a big night, and so did Jahlil Okafor and Ian Clark. And I will tell you, about 98% of the people tweeting me were furious about that win.
Yes.
Because they want to stack up as many losses as possible so they can get close to Zion and have that chance in the lottery. And I think, man, the ratings for that lottery, the NBA draft lottery in May, is going to be insane, because so many teams are just kind of have their hopes up for the possibility of bringing Zion in. And the Pelicans are certainly on that list. And it's not only their pick. I'm sure they're staring at that Sacramento Kings pick, which is owned by the Boston Celtics, or that New York Knicks pick as potential picks they can kind of go after in Anthony Davis trades as well.
Will Guillory, The Athletic, covering the New Orleans Pelicans. Your organization did a survey of about 127 players, and you ask them a whole bunch of questions, and I thought it was great that the most underrated player in the league, according to the players, which is all that really matters to me, is none other than Jrue Holiday. And I think that's a fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it shows, you know, so many people around the league respect Drew Holiday and what he does. And I think something we all kind of underrated with Drew before he kind of got injured this year is the way that guy just shows up to work every single day, never missed games, played 36 minutes a night, had the responsibility of being the best perimeter player on offense for the Pelicans while also having to defend the best player on the other team on the perimeter. And that guy just had so much responsibility, and he kind of led with his activity every single night. But the way he played the game, I think everybody around the league respects him, and I think it says a lot that a guy, you know, on a team with so much turmoil on them and not in the playoffs, and guys still look at Drew Holiday and say, hey, man, he's much better than a lot of people think.
No question. Is Julius Randle worth keeping, or is his price going to be too high?
Yeah, I think that's the big question is what the price is going to be. I think the Pelicans are going to have a good amount of salary cap room going into the summer. I think a lot of it depends on, obviously, the way the Anthony Davis situation flips out and what type of pieces they get back, how Julius Randle fits in with those guys and the draft pick as well. But I think the way he's played, I think it would be crazy for them to not at least take a chance, especially with the way he's kind of expressed multiple times that he would be interested in coming back in New Orleans. And I think it would be a good look for the franchise to say, okay, Anthony Davis does want out, but we do have guys like Drew Holiday and Julius Randle who want to be here, and it's not necessarily a toxic environment where everybody's, you know, sprinting out of the exit door as soon as possible. There are guys that look at the franchise and say, hey, we like what they're doing here. We want to be a part of this. And having a guy like Julius Randle put up career numbers and say he want to come back and continue to improve, I think that's a good look for everybody involved.
Will Giller of The Athletic. You hear all the reports that nobody's going to want to come play via free agency with LeBron James. The only way they're going to make something happen is via a trade. It just seems to me that that is up the ante for the Pelicans when the Lakers readdress this thing after they know where they stand in the draft. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think the Lakers are kind of in the same boat as the Pelicans as far as waiting to see how the draft lottery plays out. I'm sure they would love to jump up and go get Zion. I think that would be really interesting if the Lakers got that number one pick. Would they rather keep it or trade it for Anthony Davis? I think that's kind of a debate people will be having like 24/7 if that were to happen. Or even if they were to jump up to 2 or 3, you know, would they be willing to give up that pick for a guy like Anthony Davis? Because like you said, I think if they do miss out on Anthony Davis, I don't really think there are many options for them left to surround LeBron James. And even though he's not getting younger, I mean, he's looking for them to add somebody this summer, and he's ready to compete for at least a chance to get back to the Western Conference Finals next year. And certainly with the guys they have on the roster, I mean, they have some promising guys with Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Alonzo. If those guys can stay healthy, I think this team will be way more interesting than they were this year. But I don't think they're ready to compete at the highest level in the Western Conference, especially if Kevin Durant goes back to Golden State. I mean, they got a really long way to go, and they've got to bring in some type of superstar talent like Anthony Davis. And if they miss out, I mean, I don't see Durant going there or Kemba Walker or Kawhi Leonard. I mean, if you just keep running down the names, and it doesn't seem like any of those guys really be interested in L.A. And then I really think it'll be the worst-case scenario if they sit around and say, okay, we'll hold on to our cap space one more year and wait for Anthony Davis to go into free agency in 2020. I mean, that would be a complete disaster, and I don't know what they would do next season. So it's a really big summer for the Lakers as well.
You follow the game. If you had the number one pick and you were the Lakers with LeBron James, would you take Zion, or would you give that pick to the Pelicans and take the more proven, still young, but often injured, Anthony Davis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, personally, I think it would be insane for anybody to say the number one pick this year. I think Zion is a generational talent. I think that guy's going to be incredible in the league, and I think not only just for the talent he brings, but I think the culture he sets and the way he plays, how hard he plays every single night, the emotion he brings, I think he's going to be an excellent addition for whoever gets him. And not only that, but just the cost control. I mean, he's a guy on a rookie contract, and if you're bringing in Anthony Davis, that's somebody you're paying $30-plus million a year, and you know that's going to have a big effect on the way you build the rest of your roster. So I think for the Lakers, obviously, it'll be a tough decision because, just like we said, LeBron is going to want a more established guy. He's not going to want to wait for Zion to develop.
Right.
But, man, if I was a GM, I couldn't offer me anything to trade Zion. I think that guy is going to be that good.
Do you think the Lakers should entertain the thought possibly of trading LeBron James?
I think it's still really early for that. I think they still have some moves to make. Like I said, I think they have young, interesting pieces, and I think if they want to move those guys, they can get some good assets back. And, you know, they're still obviously in it with the Anthony Davis sweet space. I think they're still going to be involved all the way till the end. But we're much closer than we thought they were going to be at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's insane how much, how bad this season has gone for them. And so not only just on the court, but off the court, and the turmoil and the mistrust. And, you know, this one taking shots at that one through the media and the situation with the coaching staff and Magic Johnson and ownership. There's too much going on. I think that they need a lot to change this summer, but I still think if you give LeBron an extra 2 months to rest and really get prepared for next season, I think he's going to be a problem next year for sure.
If you had told me that the Lakers won the LeBron sweepstakes and are back in the lottery, I'd have said no way. But that's exactly where they are. Will Giller of The Athletic tonight. Not only the close for the Pelican season, but the close of a career. Dwayne Wade as a Miami Heat legend. Man, your thoughts?
Man, like you said, a legend. I think he's one of the few guys I've kind of felt this way about Dwayne Wade when he went out. Just so few guys. We rarely see guys go out and with this type of love and so many people respecting what they did in the game. And it's just incredible to see what he's been able to accomplish, not only as the solo star in Miami, but obviously sharing the stage with LeBron and Chris Bosh, where they were the heroes and everything he's accomplished. And I think what this goodbye tour has really opened my eyes to this year, especially when they came down here to New Orleans. I never thought there were so many Dwayne Wade fans, and I think everybody kind of expected it during the Kobe goodbye tour and just how crazy those arenas were every night he came out. But, man, just the amount of people that just have some type of experience with Dwayne Wade and just love that guy and what he represents. And you just see so many of these fans with their Wade jerseys lined up, and they've got the gear from his store, and they all have different stories about Wade in the Olympics or Wade at Marquette, Wade during his early Miami years. I mean, it's crazy just to think how many people he's touched throughout his career, and it says a lot about the way he plays and just the person he is off the court.
I did his games, a couple of his games when he was back at Marquette, and I said, man, this kid's going to be good. I had no idea he was going to be that good. One of the all-time greats closes out a career today, and the Pelicans close out their season, and unfortunately, it'll be bigger news in the offseason than it was for the 82-game regular season. It's going to be a completely different look next year. I just hope and pray they get the right guys in and they can pull the right strings, and maybe, just maybe, they'll get a little bit of luck in this draft, and we'll see what happens. But you'll be there covering it all, as always, and I greatly, greatly appreciate your time. Go eat that free food at the arena one more time, man. One more time.
One last time, one more trip to the SKC, one more time sitting in Peyton's Playmakers. I'm going to miss the arena, but, you know, I like you said, I think it's just good for us to kind of get to this next phase and kind of see where this franchise goes in the future.
Yeah, you're right. Will, thank you so much, buddy. Take care.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right, you got it. So they're expected to make this decision pretty darn soon, certainly within a week's time. Their interview process is over today. The vetting is being done, and a decision needs to be made. Will it be one person? Will it be a president and a GM? I think that's the route they're going to go. And I think Danny Ferry is going to lead the charge. And I think if he has any say in the matter, maybe it is Trajan Langdon. That would be my betting guess right here, right now. I did pick Virginia to win the whole thing. Not just yesterday, but in the start of the tournament. So, you know, every once in a while a squirrel gets a nut. Meanwhile, after this timeout, final one of the hour, the Saints will be heading back to L.A. I'll tell you why and when next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 53 minutes after the hour. Great to be with you. Thanks for including us in your day. And the NFL always those little snippets out every once in a while. They release their preseason matchups today. The exact dates of some of the games aren't yet known, but the league kind of shared a window into in which each game will be played. The Saints will begin the preseason with a home game against, guess who? The Minnesota frickin' Vikings. I'm so tired of playing the Vikings. I hate them. And that's going to be somewhere between August 8th and August 12th. So that's a Thursday, a Friday, a Saturday, or a Sunday. So just stay tuned for that. Then they'll go to Los Angeles to face the Chargers on Sunday, August 18th. So that means for the third straight year, the Saints, Drew Brees, the Chargers, Phillip Rivers, will have joint practices out there in beautiful, beautiful L.A., San Diego area, wherever it may be. The Saints' third preseason game will be in New York against the Jets between August 22nd and August 25th. And their preseason finale, in which none of the starters ever play, who cares? Why can't the Saints have a preseason finale on the road? Well, the preseason finale will be at home against the Miami Dolphins on August 29th or August the 30th. That Chargers game will be on CBS. But anyway, for whatever it's worth, there you have it. So the Saints will open up against the Vikings. Then they'll go to L.A. to take on the Chargers, to New York to take on the Jets. So they'll be bi-coastal and then home to wrap things up against the Dolphins. And again, why have them? I hate spring games in college football because they mean absolutely nothing. Nothing. And I hate preseason games in the NFL. Because these are pros. Just give them one or two games to get their feet under their belt, and let's go play for real. Nobody wants to see these preseason games, particularly the last one, because nobody's going to play. And very, very few, if any, that play in that game make the team. Some of them make the practice squad, and then all the other ones will whatever. So anyway, there you have that. And it'll be interesting. We'll have Mike Dettillier on tomorrow to talk about the NFL draft, what his thoughts are for the New Orleans Saints, what his thoughts are for some of the LSU Tigers, Devin White, Greedy Williams, not so much them, but how far up has Foster Moreau climbed up the charts, what's going to happen to a John Battle, and so forth and so on. So we'll look forward to having Mike Dettillier on tomorrow, and we are 90% sure that David Toms will join us tomorrow as well, as it'll be one day before the start of the Masters, and he'll take us through the course and his thoughts on what it takes to win at Augusta. Tiger met the media today, and nobody moves the meter and the needle like Tiger Woods, and CBS and Augusta National would love nothing more than to see him playing in the final pairing on the final day on Sunday. And come to think of it, so would I. I'd love it too. All right, hour number one's in the books. Coming up, hour number two, Hot Topics. Talk LSU Southern Baseball and Kim Mulkey, three-time coach of a national championship basketball team at Baylor, joins us as well. Hour number one of the Jordy Helfrich Show, done. Hour number two coming up on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Stick around.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
All righty, hour number two of two on a gorgeous gorgeous Chamber of Commerce Acadiana Day. It's Tuesday, April 9th. We got a busy second hour planned for you and yours. So without further ado, let's crack it open quickly with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, I got a stat of the day for you. You ready for this one, big guy?
Let's
How
go,
are
brother.
You?
I'm doing good,
All right.
I'm doing good.
Virginia wins the national championship. In the Elite Eight, Purdue led 70-67 over Virginia with 5 seconds left in the game. In the Final Four, it was Auburn 61, Virginia 57 with 17 seconds left in the game. And in the championship game, it was Texas Tech 68, Virginia 65 with 12 seconds left in the game. What a run. UVA never quit and got it done. What a season for the Wahoos.
Hey, God, Jordy, it was amazing to see what Virginia wound up doing. The Cavaliers, your national champions. And I have to say, Jordy, heading into it, I thought this would probably be one of the worst national title games of all time. Because it's two very defensive-minded, very methodical teams. And it just doesn't necessarily make for the best television. But, Jordy, that was probably the most entertaining thing tournament final I've seen in a good while.
It was spectacular. Didn't start off well. I could hear all the people out there screaming when after about 4 or 5 minutes, it was like 3-2. And I could hear everybody. But, boy, they settled in. They started making play. I thought it was one of the best finals games in many, many a year. And they scored more points than a lot of teams have done of recent. And I'm talking regulation, not even overtime. So it was a great matchup, great series. Nothing but kudos to both teams. It's a shame only one can win. But tip of the cap to Tony Bennett and Virginia. Great job, great tournament all year long.
It was just great to see what Tony Bennett did, kind of going full circle after last year, having to losing the way that they did against UMBC, and then you bounce back and you finish a job and be able to win it all. That was it was just really cool all the way around, Jordy. But I did have one complaint. I think it's a lot of people's complaints, Jordy.
All right,
Jordy. Is the NCAA tournament final starting too late in the day?
Wow. It was like 8:20, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 8:20.
It was perfect for me because I got to see my daughter's volleyball game, and I made it home, and I just missed the tip, but I was there. It starts too late. So they need to move it an hour earlier, and they need to move the Super Bowl to a Saturday. What else you want me to complain about? Because the Super Bowl's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Hey, Super Bowl should stay on a Sunday, Jordy. After all, you do have
I can't. You don't have to get up as early the next day. You can't. You always are going, I can't do this because I got to work the next day. No, Saturday.
All right, Saturday. Jordy.
And LSU should never have an open date before they play Alabama in football. Too much pressure, too much of a buildup. So those are my three things right there.
All right, Jordy, moving over to the world of baseball, because obviously one of the other big stories is Chris Davis and his hitless streak.
Wow.
And it got me thinking, and I dove deep into the stat files for this one, Jordy. What's a worse streak in baseball, going 0-49 or what the Phillies did all the way back in 1961, 23 straight games, and they took an L on all three. 23
of them. The worst is the team, obviously.
Yeah.
That's the worst because, you know, you can hide a certain player. You can rest a player. You can't hide a team. But, I mean, Baltimore has a sense of humor because now they put the image of Mr. Davis on the side of a bus because they don't want the bus to hit anything. So how about that?
That is just well done, Jordy. That is just extremely well done. Meanwhile, you look at the world of baseball on another aspect with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Chris Archer suspended 5 games for his part in the base brawl they had over the weekend between the Pirates and the Reds. Is that enough, Jordy? 5 games?
What did they give Yasiel Puig? Because Puig wanted to take on the whole Pirates organization.
He wanted
to fight Willie Stargell.
I believe it was about 3 games for Puig.
Okay.
No, two.
Well,
Two. We got two.
Yeah, he threw deliberately behind the guy after he stared at his home run. So, yeah. I mean, gee whiz. Make it a week. Make it seven games. I don't know. It's just can't have that, man. It's too much.
I mean, at least make it like 10 games because you think about like typically you'd want to probably be missing on a 10 games. You'd probably want to missing like only like two or three of them because you're a starter as opposed to like, oh, hey, I guess you have Puig missing two games. Makes sense, but I feel like 10 games should have been the suspension just to kind of make sure he misses a couple extra starts.
Agree. You win.
All right, Jordy. Moving over back to college basketball because big news coming out of there is Mick Cronin, the new head coach at UCLA. The reports are coming out. It seems pretty much all but official.
Yep.
But you got to think about it, Jordy. Is this considered dumpster diving after missing out on all the names they had on the big board?
Well, they went after Calipari. They went after Rick Barnes. No telling who else they went after. But I remember there was an LSU football search at one point in time, and they went after this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy, and they ended up with some guy named Nick Saban out of Michigan State. So sometimes you swing and you miss, and you find a diamond in the rough. So we'll see what Mick Cronin can do. He's not that laid-back L.A. guy now. He is hardcore, tougher than nails, scares you when you look at him, kind of a coach that rolls his sleeves up at Cincinnati. So we'll see what kind of job he can do. He recruited at Cincy. That's the key. Can he recruit for UCLA? Well, I think he can.
It's definitely going to be huge to see what he winds up doing going forward for UCLA. But looking over at Jordy, of course, it's a tradition unlike any other. The Masters, it's getting ready to be kickstarted.
Ooh,
I know they're going to
can't wait.
Practice in on Wednesday. But, of course, yeah, the media scrum go on. And Tiger Woods, put it simply, he feels like he can wind up winning this tournament this year. I think a lot of people are going to wind up picking him. I know Elkington, he wound up talking about it on the Jim Rome show recently. He says he thinks that he can win the whole darn thing. Jordy, you buying that?
Man, what basis do I have to really fully believe that other than, yes, he has played the course before. Yes, he's won a whole bunch of times there. But of late, do I have anything to grasp onto it? I would love nothing more than for him to win. But if I'm betting my hard-earned money, I'm taking the field and not Tiger.
I'd agree with you, Jordan. I definitely would probably wind up taking the field there. Probably wind up looking pretty well. But then again, I mean, Tiger Woods did look really well in match play against Rory McIlroy. He got hit in his head. And that was definitely something that I thought about heading into today. But I'm still leaning towards the field because Tiger, I'm not all in on him. Like, I'm not all in on him.
I wish. I would love nothing more than that. But you know he'll end up getting one good round and get us all excited, and then can he consistently do it 4 days in a row? And I have yet to see that at this point in time. I'm hoping. Keeping hope alive.
All right, Jordy, last one. The odds for the 2020 national championship game for college basketball, they're already out. And my LSU goodness. 50-1 odds. Are the odds a little bit too high for LSU right now?
Yeah, who's on their team? We don't know yet.
Who's going to be left on their team?
Who's going to be left on the team? Who's going to be their coach? What's going to happen? I have no earthly clue. We'll see. And we'll see sooner rather than later. Thank you, Clint. That is your
You're
Hot
welcome,
Topics.
Jordy.
Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Right there in St. Martinville, the Beard family, for nearly 90 years. A great product. I love it. You'll love it, too. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. LSU baseball talk with former Southern University legendary coach Roger Cador next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. This hour of the program, we got two legendary coaches. One who is no longer in the business, but is still around as a fixture. And we'll talk to the victorious head coach of the Baylor Bears women's program, another Louisiana native, in Kim Mulkey, coming up shortly. But first, with LSU baseball traveling to North Baton Rouge and heading to the Bluff to take on the Southern University Jaguars. Former longtime great baseball coach of Southern University, Roger Cater, kind enough to join us. Roger, how's life treating you these days, my friend?
Life is good, Jordy. Life is good. I know life I'm saying Jordy's Jordy, but you know, Jordy. But life is really good.
When I think of LSU and Southern University playing baseball, I always see you there at third base. How did this all come about with LSU and Southern playing? Because there's a lot of times that, you know, schools that close to one another won't play each other. Take me back to the origin of this.
Well, you know, back in 1984, Skip and I took over the job, and Skip and I met. And that's when you could play fall games and all of that. You know, we met and we talked about playing, and then once that led to some other things, doing stuff in the community with each team, so with the team. So everything, that's how it started. We talked and we thought it was a good thing to play each other.
Mm-hmm. It was a very good thing, and it was very hard to play at Southern because there were no lights for so long.
But there was no field.
So you always had to go on the road. But because of your due diligence and your hard work and your gift of gab, man, it's amazing what's transformed over at your university.
Well, you know, I was fortunate. I didn't understand how not to ask for something that I needed. And when I say I was talking about some of my players. You know, I learned a long time ago, if you don't ask, you can't get help. You know what I'm saying? And my players needed stuff. Unfortunately, they were in a situation they had very little. And I had the ability to not be too prideful and to ask for help. And that's how a lot of stuff happened.
Roger Cater, kind enough to join us. It's a lopsided series, 53-2. I bet you can tell me everything about the two that you got.
I remember one for sure. The first one,
tell me about that one. Okay.
Well, it was we were coming off a series in from Texas Southern, and we had a big lead in game three, and we lost the game. We lost it. And so we had a Sunday, and we had Monday off, and then we play on Tuesday. And the one thing, you know, we say a lot of things to our players. I remember something I heard from my coach when I played, and I said, boys, you know, this team put their pants on just like you, one leg at a time. So they can't do it twice. They can't jump. They put both legs in at the same time. And for some reason, that made sense to the players. They started nodding their heads.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, we were very talented. And we went out at Ricky Weeks and Michael Woods, and we really did some damage that night. And we started a struggling in our strike weekend rotation. Jason Anderson, I decided not to pitch him. In the conference weekend and pitch him against LSU, he told the guys that I was trying to embarrass him, that I was punishing him. Well, that's the kind of kids you want to have, you want to coach. If they determine that you're trying to embarrass or hurt them, they want to prove that you're not doing the right thing, and he goes on and pitches the game of his life against LSU.
Yeah, 11-6 was the final score, March 6th, the year 2001. That's remarkable. You said, I had enough of this stuff. I want to get out into the private world. I'm tired of recruiting or whatever it was. Tell me about Kerrick Jackson. You talk about some literally and figuratively big shoes to fill. That's what Kerrick Jackson has to do.
I really felt bad for him to have to do that, but you know, he wanted the challenge. You know, the thing that we were on, you know, still dealing with NCAA sanction. And, you know, he had to come the first year. He got a couple of scholarships back, but he was hired so late. He was hired in August, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, I really felt bad, and he lost so many games his first year in the eighth and ninth inning. he lost 9 or 10 games that he had the lead and it got away from him. But you know what? Good things happened. Two things happened for this year that made him put him in a good position. He got the scholarships back.
Yeah.
And Southern did something that they hadn't done. He was able to recruit the JC players. We hadn't been able to do that. And that's going to help the football program also, being able to recruit JC players. You know how hard it is to just play with high school kids? I mean.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
You know, so he was boosting, got the scholarship back, and he was able to get a couple of JC kids. And, boy, he was able to fast forward the program from what he was last year. And so he's doing a really good job.
Yeah, they're 10-2 in the SWAC. They're in first place in the West Division. So, yeah, that's Roger Cater-like stats right there. So, good for him. When you have a great respect. You've dealt with Paul Menary for many, many years. Your thoughts on Paul and the job he's done at LSU?
Well, people may not give him the credit that he's done. It's tough at LSU. The demand is so high, it's through the roof, in the sky somewhere. And they want to win, just win, baby, like Al Davis. You know what I'm saying? And
yes.
Everybody else in the SEC is doing the same thing. He doesn't have any advantage because everybody's got, you know, they got great facility, you know, and they got, you know, they're paying their coaches well, and they want to win too. So Paul has got a lot, you know. He's the big dog in the state. LSU is the number one school, and he could go nationwide and get kids. So he's done a good job. I mean, you know, it's just hard to win. I mean, it's hard. When Skip left, even Skip said it'd be tougher for the next guy to win as many championships. Because of parity, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Roger
That's why
Cater
you don't see nobody else. Even Vanderbilt, who I think has a huge advantage, because what they can do, a lot of people don't know, because they are private institutions, they can end up taking kids off a scholarship if they got good grade, give them academic money, and they can get a whole bunch of kids.
Yes,
You can't do that at LSU.
No, and I think with the NCAA and all the money they make and what and baseball has shown collegially, there are universities that can turn a profit, but you still don't get the scholarship aid that is necessary. I keep wondering when that shoe's going to finally drop and give baseball more opportunity for kids to go to college and to be able to play and get an education. I just don't understand that.
Well, you know, with the gender equity thing, when they wouldn't put football, let football stand alone, it really hurt. It hurt college athletic because now they've got to find a way to take care of the girls. You see what I'm saying? And with football thrown into the equation, it just threw everything out of whack. And I don't understand how girls are doing football. Why couldn't we have figured that out? Jody?
Roger.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know, Roger. I don't understand it. It just seems logic gets thrown out the window. To be quite honest with you, but you've grown up, you lived baseball, but you were a better basketball coach than you were a baseball coach. I can tell you that right now.
Hey man, you know what? You always better as the years goes along. You know, you get better a little every year. But, you know, that was something that I wanted to do. Never wanted to coach baseball. Took them 2 months to convince me to take this baseball job.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, Dick Hill, who was the athletic director, paid a visit to my hometown, to my wife, Donna, at the time, and convinced her that I had to take this job. It was a good deal for me because I wasn't going to get the basketball job. So I took it. And things really, my life really turned around, you know, because maybe that was the path I needed. And baseball at Southern needed someone like me who was a trailblazer, who was going to do things that the next guy wasn't going to do. They were going to wait for the state to help, which the state never came around and helped. And I made a lot of stuff happen because I just went out there and put my nose to this grindstone, you know?
You had to. I mean, from no field to a beautiful field and lights and seats and sponsorship
no
signs on the outfield.
No clubhouse.
And No,
no
nothing.
Clubhouse, nowhere to dress.
Yeah.
You know, it took. Amazing. It made me wait 15 years to get it, but even I raised the money twice, so I don't. It didn't matter, you know.
Well,
it got done. I guess that's all of that, you know.
When we gonna have the Lee Hines Stadium Roger Cater Field? Come on now. I mean, it just makes sense.
No, well, they're going to put my – I didn't want it on the field. I wanted – my name is going to go up on the clubhouse.
Okay.
They will – they've already – the state has already passed it, so it's a done deal. It's just now Southern is waiting to do it. I try to stay out of it. They know that they have to do it, and I don't want to get involved in all of that. So, you know, they know it's time to do it. Wow. It's, you know, why do, you know.
No one more deserving.
As fast as he, yeah, well, you know, it's going to get done because it's law now, you know. It's going to get
right.
done.
Well, you know, one more deserving than you. You were the trailblazer, no question about that. And it was always fun seeing you and Skip. But now it's we've changed the guard, and Paul Maneri doing a great job, and the new coach at Southern, Coach Foster, doing one as well. So the game does never stand still. But, man, thanks for the time, my friend. Legendary Roger
Cater. It's always
Cater.
A pleasure, Jody.
All right, buddy, you
Jordy.
Take care.
It's hard for
All
me
right,
to say Jody. I love saying Jody.
But you're getting better at it, you see? You're getting better. You said it right this
I'm
time.
More.
I love you.
That's
I love
right.
you.
I love you, too. I love you.
All right,
I'm
buddy.
Like Dale Brown. I love everybody, okay?
Take care, Roger. Be good, my friend. There he
I
is, the legendary Roger Cater, LSU and Southern University tonight at Lee Hines Field with the new, soon-to-be Roger Cater Clubhouse. Another legend, still active, Kim Mulkey, Baylor Bears. Three national championships next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. The college basketball season is over as Virginia won the men's title over Texas Tech. What a great game that was. And on Sunday night, in the women's game, Baylor beat Notre Dame 82-81. What a great game that was as well. Our next guest is the coach of the Lady Bears. She was a winner as a player in high school, in college. She was a winner as an assistant coach, and she is the ultimate winner as a head coach. Kim Mulkey, kind enough to join us. Kim, congratulations. How are you feeling a couple of days after the fact?
Well, my voice is back a little bit, still a little bit hoarse. My mind is a little bit more rested. I did get about 6 hours sleep last night, so I'm on the road to recovery, but it's all for a good kind of tired. I'll tell you, people don't realize, they see the game, but they don't realize how much is required of these student athletes when you're in the playoffs.
Yeah. I think of Gino Auriemma, I think of Pat Summitt, and I think of Kim Mulkey, the only women's teams to win at least three championships in the NCAA era. I want to go back to when you got the, you know, Baylor comes knocking on your door and says, we want you to be the head coach, and we want you to coach our women's basketball team. When did you know you were ready, and what did you see when you first got there? Because now you're at the top, and you have been for the last decade or so, at the top of the sport, year in, year out. But take me back to that beginning. What was that all about?
Now, I'm going to take you back, and you're going to remember all of this.
Okay.
I spent 19 years of my life at Louisiana Tech, four
yes,
as a player,
did.
And then was talked into coaching by the now deceased former president, F.J. Taylor. I was working on my master's degree. I had received a postgraduate scholarship from the NCAA right after the Olympics. And he talked me into helping Leon Barmore. I had no intentions of coaching. I wanted to be on a corporate jet and fly the country and be a CEO of some big business. And I got talked into it. And little did I know, the man knew more about what I needed to be doing than I did. I spent 15 years as Leon's assistant, and Leon retired, and then current president, Dan Renaud, would not give me a five-year contract to take over for Leon, and at the time, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to follow
he?
In a
Where is he now, Kim?
Without some security now.
Yes, yes. And
so he wouldn't give me a five-year deal, and Baylor just happened to be the school that was calling, and I flew to Waco, Texas, and the rest is history. I cried about the first 2 months of after taking the job, thinking, I just left my home state.
Yeah.
I'm scared to death. I turned down 4 head coaching jobs. But it was all about principle, guys, and I had done everything I could to show my loyalty to Louisiana Tech, and if they didn't, I shouldn't say they, if Dan Renaud didn't think I was worthy of 5 years, then I needed to move on. And I look back now, and I thank God for unanswered prayers, because it needed to happen, because I would have never left there. I would never have known the Power Five conference feeling of having more money, having better competition. And here I am at Baylor, and it's been a blessing. And, you know, we've been able to maintain an elite level of play, and we left there with our third national championship with lots of Louisiana ties. Two of my assistants are from North Louisiana, one's from Shreveport, one's from Dubuque. And then you add to it the 3 kids on the court that have the Louisiana ties.
Don't remind me. We were well too aware of that fact. Don't remind me.
Well, let me tell you, I will always refer to my upbringing and my roots. Louisiana guys will always be home to me. If I could go right now when I hang this phone up and eat some crawfish and some ponchatoula strawberries, that's what I would do today.
That's not a bad gig. Wow, what a game, what a season. You had the game all under control, and can you give me an update on Lauren Cox? Such a great, great player, and it just was so sad that she went down when she did. But what is her status?
Well, it's great news. Just today we released she had her MRI last night. Fantastic news. She did not tear her ACL.
Wow.
She has a bone bruise and a sprained MCL. So,
that's
as
it.
I said
wow.
after the game, God is good, and that kid is our heart and soul. And I had to regroup as a coach and get back in that huddle and continue to convince them that they're going to make a run because, you know, they see Lauren's gone, and she's such an impact player on the defensive end of the floor and the offensive end. And we just gutted it out. I mean, if Lauren Cox does not get hurt in that game, guys, we control that game from the start.
Yeah, I agree. You did your best coaching job in the fourth quarter, despite the run, but the fact that you didn't have your total complement. But to your credit, the gals that came off the bench, God, did they step up and play for you?
Well, they did. I inserted Melissa Smith, who had been playing big, valuable minutes for us all year. She was a freshman. I knew that Notre Dame would expose her on the defensive end, but for every bucket she gave up, she came back down the floor and hit a big bucket for us. And then at the very, very end, when she fouled out, and so I had to make a decision, do I go with 4 guards and big Kalani Brown, or do I insert another big freshman post player who I felt was just a little bit too nervous, and I went with the 4 guards, and DeeDee Richards, our defensive stopper, was the one who tried to set the pick for Chloe Jackson on that drive that basically won the game, and you just go with your gut. Sometimes you make the right call, and sometimes you don't.
Kim Mulkey, kind enough to join us several days after her third national championship as the head coach of the Baylor Bears, took over in 2000. You win your first title in 2005. It's a 7-year deal, right? So knowing all that it takes and how sometimes you have to have good fortune and sometimes the ball has to bounce your way and knowing how difficult it is, I listened to something that Billy Donovan had to say, the former coach of the Florida Gators, after winning back-to-back national championships, said he was depressed because he says it really doesn't change your life. When you hear something like that, How did you respond to that?
Well, I have not seen the article you're referring to. Let me tell you, this business, as y'all know, has the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And if you're a type A personality coach, which I would venture to say we all are,
yeah,
you take the losses harder than you do enjoying the wins. And that's why coaches that have that personality remain successful. And yet, at the same time, you better have perspective in your life. Because this profession can eat you up. The media can eat you up. Social media can eat you up. Fans can eat you up. You have to have perspective. And if it doesn't start at home with your family, it better be with some of your dearest and most trusted fans, or excuse me, friends, and then your administration. And I just refuse to lose perspective. I have learned to enjoy the off season more. I have learned to relax more. And that comes from my family. You know, that just comes from the enjoyment of being around my kids. But if depression sets in, then you need to get some professional help, because it damn sure isn't worth it.
Kim, I noticed you had your baby grandson in tow in one arm, and you had your cell phone, and your older son, Kramer, was on the phone. I guess that kind of sums it all up about, you know, you better have your family and your very close friends near and dear to you, and they certainly were there for you.
Absolutely. That will always be a memory we have. My daughter is on my staff, and my son-in-law, her husband, was there with his family, and then Cannon, my grandson, they were all there, and I went to shake Notre Dame coaching staff and players' hands, and before I could get to Holly Rowe's interview, my son-in-law put his cell phone in my face, and there was Kramer, my son, with all of his Springfield Cardinals teammates, and they were busing from Northwest Arkansas to Tulsa, and they were screaming, I was screaming, and all I could think to say was, we did it, we did it. And they were going nuts, and they're on the bus, and the great part about that is one of his LSU teammates was with him, and that's Chris Chenea, who had played with him at LSU. And the other great thing was, when we were done, he said, Mom, Tuesday after you get back, he said, I get to go hit against Clayton Kershaw.
How about that?
Kershaw's in double A because he's rehabbing. And I said, I said, Kramer, no problem, big guy. He's only won the Cy Young about three times. You can do this. Go up there swinging.
Now, here I think that you're such a wise, intelligent woman, and you're letting your daughter get in this crazy profession. What's wrong with you?
Well, you know, I tell all of my players, you guys don't want to be coaches, but the truth of the matter is that's your comfort zone, and you will find it to be true. Once you graduate from college, you're going to miss it. And if you love the sport, you will find that eventually you will just kind of go right into coaching. And she got her master's degree in business from Baylor. She was a lot smarter than her old mom. And she said, let me try the operations end of it. And so she's in operations. She sits by me on that bench. And, good God, I'm surrounded with some of the finest assistants. They are so smart.
Now, tell me about this outfit. You don't pick out your clothes for big games? Somebody else, I mean, you've got it made now. You got people dressing you. What's that all about?
Well, I guess they feel sorry for me and don't want me to embarrass them or the university. So they go spend my money and lay clothes on the bed or drop them off at the front door. And they sure don't buy them for me. They leave bills for me to pay.
That's awesome. Kim Mulkey, what's the name? You've won everything. I mean, you've won everywhere. You've done everything. What keeps you driven? I mean, how do you get re-energized and refocused to go do it again?
Well, you make sure you take time off. You make sure in the off season you put that ball down, turn that film off, and you just forget about basketball. And I my players will tell you, I played the game. I'm not going to burn them out. I know, you know, it's a 12-month job now, and those kids play summer ball, and they do USA basketball. Sometimes it's too much, and that's when you start seeing fatigue mentally, and then you start seeing injuries. We put the basketball down, And we know when to start it back up. I was thinking after the game, we took this team to Italy in August. So we've actually been playing since August.
Gee whiz.
And that's a long time.
Yeah. You know, they've talked about coaches, women coaches, going to coach the men. What you know, for instance, UCLA just filled their job with Mick Cronin. What if UCLA came to Kim Mulkey and said, you know what? Why don't you come coach our men's program? Would you have any interest whatsoever in doing something like that?
Not at UCLA. Do you know how much it costs to live out there? And then I heard they don't even charter flights.
Oh, but I think you could probably convince them, and $5 million wouldn't hurt. Huh? Come on, Kim.
$5 million is the equivalent of $2 million everywhere else. But to answer your question, what female would not be honored to be asked to coach a Power Five men's team? I do believe this, as I said, for many years, I played Dixie Youth Baseball and Pony League for the right reasons. I didn't go out there for publicity or because I was a girl. I went out there because I could kick their rear ends, and I was doing it every day in recess at school and first pick in the draft. There are a handful of women who have the it factor to gain respect from males. There are many women who have basketball knowledge. Heck, there are many men who have basketball knowledge. There are many doctors who are extremely smart and have knowledge, but mm-hmm. they don't have bedside manners and they can't reach their mm-hmm. patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in my lifetime, there will be an athletic director someday who will bite the bullet and say, this is the most qualified person for this job, and what do you have to lose? If they don't get it done, like any male, get rid of them. But I think a concern a lot of people have is the connections and relationships in recruiting on the men's side. Well, a good female is not going to bring all of her assistants from the women's side. They're going to go hire the best assistants that have been in the trenches recruiting on the men's side. So it is definitely something that will happen, guys. I mean, look in the NFL. They just hired their first female assistant football coach.
Mm-hmm.
Becky Hammons is on Popovich's staff as a female assistant. It's going to happen.
Kim Mulkey, I hope you get some rest and relaxation. Go vacation. Go lay on a beach. Do something. Hug that grandkid. Get away from the bouncing ball and go relax and enjoy what has to be so fulfilling. I mean, you've been there since 2000, and that's three national championships. They don't come easy, but it's got to be fulfilling for you, man. Congratulations.
Listen, I am enjoying life today. It's beautiful. I'm walking outside. The only thing missing is crawfish and strawberries. Y'all go eat some for me.
We'll ship them to you. Kim Mulkey, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Take care now.
All righty. There you go. She is, man. LSU made a huge mistake back in the day. Should have done it. And what about that? What about the president at Louisiana Tech? How's he feeling right now? What a mistake. What a winner. Kim Mulkey. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back. Still no word on Will Wade and LSU. Dead period's coming to an end in about a day or so. And National Signing Day is a week from tomorrow, the 17th. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. Yep. I got this text. I thought it was absolutely amazing. You know, we talked about Chris Davis and his incredible 04, 48 or 49, whatever it is, from the start of this year to going back to last year, hadn't had a hit in forever and a day. The city of Baltimore has put Chris Davis's image on their buses to make sure the buses don't hit anything. Ouch! Ouch! But funny, but ouch! My goodness. I mean, does the guy feel guilty? He's making $100 million and he can't put the bat to the ball? I mean, it's all in the head now, right? It's got to be. That's crazy. Way to go, Baltimore. Jeez. Put his face on your bus so the bus won't hit anything. That's remarkable. All right, speaking of hitting, time for our daily history lesson. It was on this day, April 9th. We go way back in time to the year 1912. That was when Fenway Park hosted its very first game. And it wasn't a real game. It was an exhibition between the Red Sox and Harvard University. He had to go about 11 days later for the first regular season game that took place on April 20th and drew 27,000 fans. Venerable Fenway Park opened its doors on this day, April 9th, the year 1912. Wow. They've been pretty good of late, right? Yeah, they've been pretty good. All right, birthday wishes. Man, if today is your birthday, what a Chamber of Commerce day it is. Absolutely gorgeous this April the 9th. You share it with, man, what a resume he has. Happy 64th birthday to Dennis Quaid. Remember, he was the old high school baseball coach, and they said try out, and he just threw that thing about 100 miles an hour. That was a pretty cool movie. Pretty cool movie. Dennis Quaid, happy birthday. If it's your anniversary today, happy anniversary from all of us to all of you. From everyone here at 103.7 The Game and Delta Media. Special thanks to our guest, Lane Burrows, giving us the latest on Louisiana Tech as the Raging Cajuns host the Bulldogs later on today. It's the regular season and the season ending game for the New Orleans Pelicans. Will Guillory joined us to it's fitting that DeMarcus Cousins is going to play in the last game of the season for the Woeful Pels. And then it was so much fun visiting with Roger Cador, the former Southern University head coach, LSU taking on Southern tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. And Kim Mulkey, what a job. What a job she's done. I wish LSU would offer her the moon to come coach at basketball at LSU on the women's side. That would be so much fun. But they'll never do it. They aren't forward-thinking enough. Anyway, so, CD, outstanding job as always. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners for making it possible each and every day. We greatly appreciate it. Tomorrow, man, we got all kind of stuff. David Toms joins us to talk about the Masters and so many other guests. Too much, not enough time to tell you, but tune in tomorrow. It's going to be great. I promise you that. So, till tomorrow, when we come back, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.